Hi, everybody. This is Matt Stevens in Abu Dhabi. I'm here with Jim Buckingham, also in Abu Dhabi, but in a remote location to mine. And let's see, I think my microphone's gone down a little bit. There we go. Turn it back up again. What's today is November 20th, 2011, and we're meeting as a Learning Together event. We've got Elizabeth Anne from Grenoble, France, all the way from Grenoble, and whoa, way far away in Ontario, we've got Laura Stoutenberg. And we are kind of in the midst of EVO moderator training, but the EVO moderators, according to Elizabeth, had their meeting last night, she said. I thought it was tonight, but anyway, either way, it was pretty late. So I think Elizabeth and Laura are just kind of popped by to see what was going on, and what's going on is something that Jim has posted in an Etherpad here. And Jim, do you want to introduce the topic?
Sure. Thanks, Vance. This has been a topic that I've been chewing on for quite a while and then wondering if I'd ever have the nerve to talk about. It's come up quite a bit with from a local context here, and what we're doing with TESOL Arabia and promoting EdTech for EFL instructors in the region. It also comes out of one of the last modules I took as part of a master's degree in online and distance ed with the OpenU. And so I thought I might take a crack at sharing it. I think it's really appropriate right now for us here in the UAE, but I think it's such a general topic that it's appropriate to any of us that are involved in EFL as instructors or as professionals. That's I've got an outline there on the Etherpad of sort of what I hoped or what I thought would be appropriate to talk about. And perhaps everybody can take a moment to look at that. Vance, can you guide us on how to open up to the web tour, which gives us access to the... I've got it in front of me right now, but it may be an issue for others.
Well, I think the only issue is it's not really properly in a browser. I was able to put my name there, but we can accomplish the same thing. We can just leave it there to watch how it develops. But if you just open a browser and pop in that URL, the TitanPad 142, and then you'll have it properly in a browser, and then you can write your name. And once you've done that, you can start. Looks like we have several unnamed people there already. There's Jim and I. I've got a name now. I've got a color. And I'm going to just remove authoring colors from there. And there we go. Okay, so does that go in the screen tour as well? So basically, anybody can write on that document, either in the screen tour or you can open it up in a browser window if you want to have a little bit greater functionality. And I want to welcome Laura by having made her a moderator. So everybody in the session is on equal terms. You can play around as you like. So, and we've got the mic on Simplex, which means only one mic at a time. That's because at least one person here has sound coming from their laptop. So we can share the mic in that way. How's everybody doing in Ontario and in Grenoble?
I'm just signing into the Ethernet pad, otherwise, tout va bien.
Yeah, a funny thing happened with the screen share you tried earlier. It took over the browser window and it grayed out the tools, so I didn't have any access to them. I couldn't talk or I couldn't navigate at all. Now, the screen share is a little bit of an odd one. Okay, well, I'm going to have a look at this document, and maybe Laura, you could check in and tell us what it's like in Ontario right now. It must be kind of cold, I'm imagining.
Hey, that's my home province, Laura. Whereabouts are you? I hail from Sarnia.
According to her tapped-in profile, she's in Kitchener. Does that mean anything to you, Jim? She might not have a microphone.
In Canadian terms, that means she's just down the street. It's still a 2-hour drive, though. Why don't I begin? I'll just take these chunk at a time. Start with item number one and then open it up to discussion. Just share with you my notes here. I started off by asking, what does it really mean to be an EFL professional, and just why is it even worth our time to ask the question? And essentially, I'm discovering more and more that we as individuals need to be demonstrating professional development. It's becoming more important. I know here where I'm working, for finding employment and for staying on as an employee, as well as gaining professional recognition and perhaps even advancement, if one can evidence that work and as a professional, evidence one's progress as a professional, it certainly helps on the job scene. And then from the context, from a macro context, from that of the profession, it's becoming more and more important for the profession to be recognized as professional, so that it's recognized and it's respected by other departments or other faculties that it might be working with. That's both within a university context or even from the political context of being in a school board. I bring this up because there's increasing competition for an ever-shrinking pot of funds, and it's important for professionals to be recognized and respected in order for them to compete for those funds. So they have to be seen as such if they want to be at the table fighting for those limited funds. And then ultimately helping to formulate with policy on anything that has to do with second language learning. So that's why I'm bringing it up here in the broader context right now. I'm looking at it from the individual standpoint and then from the profession standpoint. And I realize I may be simplifying this. Now, what's my background in all this? Well, a lot of this is based on personal experience, my observations from working in another field, particularly in the cultural sector back in Canada, where I worked for about 9 years, originally in education, then in curation, and then in direction of public galleries, and then realizing the parallels between that and what's going on, at least in this region, with the world of EFL. Just the fight for funding, the same deal in the arts, and the same fight to be heard or be at the table so that one can be involved in policy decisions. Yeah.
Sorry, Jim. I thought maybe you're forgetting you have to give up the mic if you want people to talk, but I think you were just about to say something. I just put in, I think this being a professional kind of is in the eye of the beholder. You know, if you're trying to look professional to your students' parents, let's say, then you have to have a look that way in the classroom, or if you want to look professional to your peers, you might do it by blogging or giving presentations. If you want to look professional by your employers, PhD is very helpful, otherwise they hardly pay attention to you, although there's a lot of lip service, it seems to me, to that kind of thing. I mean, when push comes to shove and those limited funds are being spread around, I think there's a lot of credibility given to paper certification. And that's kind of a good topic for EVO, Electronic Village Online, which is kind of having sessions paralleling ours. We've just been joined by, let me see if I can spread that out a little bit. I can't really see the, in my view anyway, I think it was Rehab. Would you like to introduce yourself, Rehab? Okay, anyway, if anybody would like to comment, or Jim, can you go ahead and continue?
I just follow up on your points there, just about how it's how professional behavior or how professional development is being perceived. I think it's really changing. I think before, I'll get to this in more detail in a minute, but at least from my perspective, it's really changing. It's changing rapidly, and a large part due to the web and the ability to be able to do things and connect professionally. Let me tell you a little bit more of my thoughts here, and you feel free to elaborate on the Etherpad here if you've got any other ideas, questions, or suggestions. I looked at it a little bit further and looking at professional behavior, and you're right, Vance, part of it is also projecting the image of being a professional. The way you make contact with people as a professional, either with parents or with students or with administration or whoever. Some of the things that came out of the readings that I did as part of that course, that module, was one of the key things was just putting the interests of your students or your clients first. Now, it seems like a given, but around these parts, it's not necessarily so. There's a lot of people out here who've mentioned the whole notion of how some people will, I don't know how they manage to do it, but they're using the classroom as a platform for soliciting tutor work to make additional money on top of what they're making as a classroom teacher. That obviously is working in your own self-interest, and that would be an example of poor professional behavior, at least from my perspective, and I think from most of us. And then if one ever wanted to be a consultant, you'd definitely have to be hired on the basis of your ability to address your clients. Care to comment, anyone, on that?
Well, you mentioned two things. Who are your clients? I mean, are you students your clients? I guess in that case, if you tutor for them, you're addressing their needs. But really, the client is the person who's paying the bills. And your duties to your client might be a lot different, might be different to those to your students, or to your self-perceived professional behaviors. But if I leave it there and ask for any corroboration?
No, then I'll go on. If anybody wants to, just feel free to put your hand there and stick, so get your hand up and I'll be sure to give you the mic here. I think a good part of this is also reflecting on your own work and looking for ways to improve it. And that means knowing one's strengths as well as one's weaknesses. And I think most of us are doing this. Essentially, all this is reiterating all of the talk that had been going on for, I think, more than a decade now about being a reflective practitioner. I'm not sure everybody's aware of that, but certainly the people that I'm around do. Comments?
Interestingly, we have a number of chats going. There's one in Illuminate. You probably should use that one if you want your remarks recorded, because the Illuminate session is recorded. However, the chat log in TitanPad is also recorded, and feel free to fiddle around, no problem. And of course, we have a little bit of a chat going in the it's an Etherpad clone document itself. And yes, you can open it either through the web tour, or you can open it in another browser window. In either place, you will write equally on the document. So, in all that, I forgot your question. Jim, can you repeat it?
Just pointing out the fact that perhaps I take for granted that most of us are operating as reflective practitioners now that we've had it prophetized here for more than a decade, but I can't assume that that's the case. The whole notion of identifying on your strengths and your weaknesses, things that you need to work on, things that you're comfortable with, but then looking for ways to see if they're effective or if they're not effective and working on ways to improve them. They're just asking if that's necessarily a given with the people that you may be working with, or perhaps a different opinion on that.
Elizabeth, I'm being very silent here, because I actually teach in the national education system in France. So it's a very, very rigid system. We have, I teach at the university, so I have helped to make up the program, but we have a fixed program, etc., etc. So it's not so much a question of reflective practices as an individual teacher, but the actual external constraints, I feel, are very different to most. I hope that's clear.
It's interesting. So how is one perceived as a professional in that context, then?
Well, it's very simple, because France is such a bureaucratic country, that you pass the required examinations, and then you have a job for life. As you can't touch me, I'm part of the union. You can't touch me, I'm part of the civil service. So, basically, it's too complicated, and I don't think it's of great interest outside the context, apart from one point, which is that having a defined program, so starting from a constraint, obliges one to be extremely creative within the constraints. But I'm probably off subject, so I'll pass the mic back.
Well, I'm just thinking of the parallels that we often hear from teachers in the public school system here, the national school system here. We've got a lot more freedom in the tertiary system, but a lot of teachers here complain about a very, very rigid curriculum and that they don't have the time or space to really be innovative. And so it's interesting to hear that point of view.
I've sort of landed in an interesting situation. I would have said in my previous job I felt pretty free to innovate, and I think I was hired to innovate in my present situation, but it's to turn around a place where innovation was maybe not happening. And so I'm just answering Claudio from Brazil. He's in the tapped in chat. So I'm finding that part of the problem is that it's at the Naval College, which is, you know, a military institution, and it's people are just too tired and too stressed and too misunderstood to have innovation really taking place. And so it's a very odd situation, and it's odd for me because it's the first time in my career in a long time, possibly ever maybe, where I really haven't had time to reflect, you know, and to, it could be just maybe there's a lot of other things going on, like changing apartments several times and things like that. And, but it feels very odd to me. And so I'm sort of seeing things from the other side of the coin and feeling a little bit down about it sometimes. But on the other hand, I do like the challenge to try to get down, and the human spirit kicks in, and you want to turn the situation around. And what can you do? How can you lay your money on the table? You know, you've been talking the talk all this time. Can you really walk the walk and make innovation happen in a situation where everything is mitigating against that? I think that's a real challenge. A lot of times you reflect, you spend a lot of time reflecting, but then when you're really in the situation to put your money where your mouth is, what do you do then? And so that's an odd situation to be in.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that either, Vince, and I don't claim to be an expert on the whole thing. I think it's you learn to think on your feet and act on your feet, reflection in action, if I can borrow the term. can I move on a bit here? I'll just move on a bit. It looks like I've lost the web window here, Vance. Any idea why? Has it been closed, or have we've just left it to the Titan pad and to having Illuminate for the... Oh, there it is. Oh, thank you. Okay. I've noticed that I cannot type into the Titan pad when it's opened in the web tour window, but I can in the other. So if anybody's putting a comment in the chat section of the Etherpad, I may not be able to get to it because of the fact that I'm not being allowed to with using the web tour window. Okay, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what I came up with as professional behavior. We talked about putting interests of your clients first, reflecting on your work, and then another one was just staying current by learning about what's going on, what are current best practices, and obviously putting the interests of your clients first and meeting their needs, but also recognizing that your audience is probably changing. It's not a fixed entity. It's being impacted on changes that are going on outside the classroom or in the home or in society in general. And I'm thinking about technology here and how it's important to stay current because of the fact that many of our students are using that technology. And it's well worth tapping into using the tools that students are using to make our learning more effective. And then lastly, just contributing to the professional field. But I'll stop there and invite anybody to comment on this whole notion of staying current. It's a monster topic because I know a lot of people are wondering just how to go about it. I'm just introducing these as general headings of things that we need to do under the heading of broader heading of professional behavior.
I think that your question sort of answers itself because by definition, the people who are here are those who are staying aware of what of developments and what's going on by definition itself.
Yeah, it took the words out of my mouth there, and also there are so many ways to stay current now. I'm kind of thinking sometimes that if Webheads is slowing down at all, I mean I think it's kind of like mortar in a brick building. It sort of glues a lot of things together, but the bricks are quite important as well. And there are so much there's so many opportunities. Electronic Village Online is one thing that a lot of us have in common, and that is a way for people to stay together. But I think really more interestingly, there are some really fascinating MOOCs going on right now. And Change MOOC is one, and then there's CMC. What does that mean? I can't remember. And the lady who's running it, all this is slipping my mind. Maybe I should go and look it up. I can put some links in the text chat. But these people are having some phenomenal speakers. And Change MOOC is going on. It'll be running through the EVO sessions. It runs into maybe March of next year. It's a 34-week course, something like that. Is anybody else participating in Change MOOC?
I've tried to get in on a few of these. I think you've seen me, Vince. It's just how to make the commitment. I mean, there's some great stuff going on here. And I always say, well, it's always available, so I'll go back to it when I get a moment. But typically, it's like a constant avalanche. There's one thing right after the other after the other. I'm finding myself taking on more of a what I call a guerrilla professional development approach, where I see a need, I'm faced with a need, and then I'm looking for ways to address it, research it out pretty quickly and promptly. And then always wanting to say to myself, well, I'll find time to get back to it later, but by golly, it's just another thing, one thing right after another. How do you find you get the discipline to stick with a MOOC, say, for 32 weeks? Even just a week is can be a challenge. Comments?
Well, yeah. I mean, the assumption that you need to stick with it for 34 weeks is not is not one that you should be operating on. You should go 1 week and learn, and then come back 10 weeks later and try it again, and 2 weeks after that, or just pick up on it off and on. I mean, I don't, just because I'm aware of it doesn't mean I'm following it that closely, but I think the whole theory of MOOCs is really amazing me. And if you, the course I'm putting on for the EVO session, it's a course on multiliteracies, but you might as well call it a course on MOOCs right now, because I've just taken on the idea of running courses in that open way that addresses where the users basically make the course, and you put out a syllabus because everybody wants to see one. But in fact, what happens in the course is that it just progresses as anybody wants to pull it. As George Stevens said one time, he talked with us, actually one of our very early, I think it was a multiliteracies event similar to Learning Together, where we had, during one of the multiliteracies courses, he came on and talked to us. But he's a really nice guy. He'll come on and talk to anybody. But he said that his job was to provide coherence in the course. And so basically you set up a syllabus that provides some coherence, like in a way, like the document that you set up, Jim. It gives us coherence, but it doesn't, it gives us something to talk about. It gives us little talking points, and it's not a topic, and it's coherent, and even cohesive, you might say. If some of the things that he says about MOOCs, for example, the need it addresses, it addresses the fact that students and participants in anything have so many different diverging needs and what they're looking for in a course, that the one size fits all just doesn't work. And so the only really problem with making everything a MOOC is that somehow you have to have a degree program, you know, and obviously you have to give people accreditation for what they know. So you, so the MOOC concept is experimenting now with trying to meet that need while giving courses for anybody at any time, you know, just in time learning. So it's really fascinating. I find the whole the spontaneity of them, the quality. And what they're doing is they're actually doing exactly what you're suggesting in this document, and they're giving teachers opportunities to come together and to reflect and to share with one another and to learn from one another, and even entirely change their approach to learning, because once you've kind of got the MOOC concept, how it works, you start changing your outlook toward learning, which is kind of, Etienne Wenger once asked one of our web heads, Christina Costa, how she knew she was in a community of practice, and she said when her practice changed. So basically, if change comes about as a result of your professional development efforts, then you are professional, I think, by definition.
I love it. I mean, I like the idea. The concept of the MOOC is fantastic. And the whole concept of being able to be more actively involved in your professional development, I think, is great, fantastic. I think in the past, I used to do a lot of this with teachers when I worked in the cultural sector, and you'd see a lot of passive work where people would go to workshops, and by and large, the presenter was doing all of the work. There may have been 10 or 15 minutes at the tail end of it where somebody was invited to do something. But it tended to be more flash in the pan, where I think today, with the stuff that's going on online, and that's actually the conclusion I'm coming to, because we've got these online tools, we've got the capacity now to be it more than a flash in the pan. There can actually be some continuity by sharing ideas and learning from others, inviting others to try an idea, test an idea that I've come up with, to see if it's got validity in another space. And then over time, one gets a bit more confident in their ideas or having their ideas tested, that they may feel they can go one step further by actually making an even bigger contribution. And they don't need to do it singularly, they can do it as a group. All of that's now being made possible with a lot of these online tools, like you're saying, Vance with the MOOC, and your experience with learning together and the webheads, etc. And I think that's the part that's really, really, really different. That's exciting. To me, that's incredible. It's a bit ahead on my points here, but yeah, sure.
To me, I have a little difficulty going into a MOOC saying, okay, we'll see where it goes. I mean, I know it often does go somewhere, but it for me, the original syllabus, I always work with these pretending syllabi, because we say, okay, we're going to do that, and okay, we leave and do something else. But if I walk in and say, we'll just do what comes up, it doesn't work. I think that initial aim has to be there in order to be put aside later as the needs come up.
Well, that's where the coherence is. You see, the MOOCs all have a program of some kind. So there is a coherence and there's a topic. But if you compare, in your informal learning, if you take what you're doing now, which is basically you're MOOCing right now just by being here and talking to us and learning from us as we're doing, learning from each other, I should say, as we do informally like this, this is kind of a MOOC, and you're here because you're learning something, or the reason you're learning is because you're becoming connected with people, and you're learning from the people you connect with. So one connection leads to another, and that's one of the third stage in functioning within a MOOC. The first one is to orient in it, and the second one is to declare your intentions in the MOOC. The third one is to start networking with people. And that's where really the learning takes place, and that's the takeaway, according to Dave Cormier. He made some really nice videos on this topic, and that's the thing that you get from a MOOC or from the kind of informal learning we're doing right now. We wouldn't know each other if we didn't, Anne in Grenoble and me in Abu Dhabi. We would have no idea about one another if it weren't for the involvement that we have in our online, informal online learning. And the fourth thing you do in a MOOC after networking is you cluster, which means that you, since there are thousands of participants, and this is the problem with the flash in the pan aspects of these previous professional development endeavors, is that they don't stick because they presume that one person knows what everyone else needs to know. But the cluster aspect of a MOOC means that you find people who are similar to you, and because it's a MOOC, there are lots of them. That's a massive open online course, thousands of people. So from that critical mass, you can find the 2 or 3 or 10 people that you can interact with, and after that you focus, and that's where your learning takes place. But if you track those 5 things, you can see that that's what we do in our informal learning, and learning together in webheads, in various aspects of the TESOL Arabia EdTech SIG. That's where the learning takes place, and so you make your own cohesion in a way. So I don't know if that I was responding to the fact that you said you needed to have this program, but in fact you're making your program as you go along in this kind of learning, which a MOOC more logically emulates, as opposed to a course laid on in a flash in the pan sort of training session that Jim was talking about.
I think it's also important to talk about the level of passivity and activity one's prepared to give. I mean, even right now amongst us, there are going to be some of us, yourself, Vance, myself, and Elizabeth, for instance, where we're engaged in a dialogue here. Whereas there may be a number of us that may be observing this and maybe as observers becoming familiar with the terms and probably holding back on trying to get to in getting involved in the discussion, perhaps from a confidence level or whatever. I think this issue of passivity moving to being more active and more involved is critical, whether it be a MOOC or any sort of an online community. And that orientation that you talk about should be graduated in taking people from inviting them to come in and observe, and then perhaps setting up activities that invite them to engage in the discourse. That's the term I've often heard used. So they get a little bit of confidence with that and testing ideas, and then actually getting involved in the deeper stuff. And that's probably what's going on in those clusters that you're speaking of within the MOOCs, is that people are sorting themselves out on the basis of how they see them fitting in and the level of activity and the level of commitment that they're prepared to make. I could be wrong on that, but I strongly suspect that that's what's going on. Comments?
Yeah, well, I used to talk about the learning in the country club versus, or in the pub, you know, after work, versus learning in the board meeting. Is a different kind of learning, a different kind of environment. And people don't realize how much they learn on the golf course, let's say, or they probably do. I mean, the golf course is famous for making connections and interacting with people in a loose, effective, where your effective filter is lowered, you know, and that sort of thing. So, I think we kind of discount that kind of learning, like, for example, learning through Facebook. A lot of us are mixing our social, our friends with our, you know, in my own Facebook friends, my hundreds of friends, a lot of them I don't really know, but there are people like Elizabeth, for example, who, you know, I just interact with, and I learn from them in Facebook, and that's a completely different context than some other things I do. I've got to mention also that I've got a class in 5 minutes, so I might disappear or something, and if I do, thank you very much for the conversation.
Just on that point, you're talking about the increasing relevance and importance of informal learning versus formal learning, and I'm really big on that. In fact, I see an increasing need for people to have an e-portfolio to document that informal learning and gain recognition from it. There's a fair bit of that's a whole topic in and of itself. I'm just about ready to go here myself. One of the major points that I wanted to make doing this was to really, if there was anybody here in the region, in the Gulf region, or I guess it would apply beyond, it's just this notion that one needs to become more actively involved and actively engaged professionally, and it need not be a flash in the pan anymore. It can be, it means getting involved with online communities, connecting with other people that are interested in the profession and moving it forward, either on a personal basis or as the profession at large. And I wanted to say that there was an opportunity to also do this here in the Gulf region through the TESOL Arabia EdTech SIG, and I've listed some of the ways that somebody could get involved there with exploring the use of education technology. That it needn't be come in, take what you want, and take off. I'm hoping that people will see that there's real value in sharing ideas, sharing your successes, and sharing your failures so that you've got support, you're gaining support from one another, and that can be done online through that community, as opposed to the old paradigm of being left, I guess, isolated. I think it still goes on. I think I'll just about close there. I'll open it up to anybody else who wanted to make a comment. Yeah, probably that's true, Elizabeth. My apologies if it comes across that way.
I'm sitting on the edge of my chair because people are waiting for me, but I just wanted to say bye and thank you very much indeed. That was good stuff. Okay, see you another time. Bye.
Okay, Elizabeth, always a pleasure to talk to you and to imagine your surroundings there in the foothills of Grenoble and the foothills of the Alps. And so this has been Learning Together, November 20th. Elizabeth is keeping people waiting. I'm keeping people waiting in a class that's starting in just 2 minutes from now. And Jim is ending his day in Zayed University in Abu Dhabi. So that's it for us, Learning Together. We're here every Sunday, usually at noon GMT at tapped.in.org to find out what we're doing. Or you can come to Learning Together, that's learning with a two, learningtogether.pbworks.com. So hope to see you one of these Sundays. And bye for now.
Thanks, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye then.